new gun legislation is working its way through Congress with some optimism from Democrats and Republicans that they might be able to find common ground. The bills come as President Biden called for a series of new regulations in a primetime speech last week.
We need to ban assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. And if we can't ban assault weapons, then we should raise the age to purchase them from 18 to 21. Strengthen background checks. Enact safe storage law and red flag laws. Repeal the immunity that protects gun manufacturers from liability. Address the mental health crisis, deepening the trauma of gun violence and as a consequence of that violence.
The bill's up for debate in the House, and the negotiations in the Senate don't include all of Biden's proposals, but could mark a significant step in federal firearm regulations. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want Congress to take up any or all of those measures President Biden was calling for? What kind of regulations, if any, would you support? If you're opposed to new gun laws, how would you like Congress to respond to a recent mass shootings and other episodes of gun violence? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jacob Charles is Executive Director of the Center for Firearms Law at Duke University. Jake, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we heard from the president there. Democrats in the House are advancing some legislation, but the big funnel is the U.S. Senate. What are you watching for as some Republican and Democratic senators seem to be conversing with the idea that they might pass something?
Right. And so this is something that we saw, especially in the wake of the Sandy Hook shooting in 2012, where it looked like there was a lot of bipartisan activity and a lot of support, especially for a background check bill that would have expanded the federal requirement for background checks to a lot of different private sales. Obviously, in 2012, that bipartisan coalition fell apart and there was not ultimately legislation passed. This time, it's hard to say at this point for me as a political insider, but as a legal scholar looking in from the outside, whether it's more like 2012 and those initial stages where it looks like there's going to be some gun laws enacted, or if it's different and the Senate can actually agree on something and pass legislation. There are also this time around some new proposals in the mix that weren't discussed or weren't as discussed as seriously in 2012. One of those being red flag laws that now 19 states in the District of Columbia have these laws, and Congress is considering legislation to incentivize more states to take it up.
Let's tackle that point now, the idea of not a federal red flag law, but a federal effort to encourage states to do that. And people are pointing toward Florida, a Republican-controlled state for quite a while now after the Parkland shooting, putting this red flag law in place. When we say red flag laws, what do we mean? What does that look like in most implementations?
Right. So what red flag laws are they are a civil restraining order that is modeled off of domestic violence restraining orders. And so these are non-criminal proceedings. They are laws that allow law enforcement, sometimes family or household members, some laws allow other groups of people to go into court and tell a judge this person is exhibiting signs and behaviors in conduct that is showing them to be an imminent risk of harm to themselves or others. If the judge is then satisfied that the standard is met, that this person is an imminent risk of harm to themselves or others, the judge can issue an order that temporarily deprives the person from possessing firearms for a finite period of time. There is an initial emergency order that can be issued in most laws that lasts usually 2 weeks or less. And then there's a longer order that can be issued after a full hearing that sometimes lasts up to about a year. But these are temporary orders and they're designed for these periods of crisis where somebody's going to be a threat to themselves or others.
The argument against red flag laws when it comes up is that it doesn't allow sufficient due process for the person who's having guns removed from their premises. From a legal standpoint, what do you think of that argument?
Right. So from a legal standpoint, I think first it's surprising to some to think that the kind of go-to counter argument wouldn't be the Second Amendment, but it's this due process concern. And one reason for that is that courts have recognized that legislatures have the power to take away the weapons from someone who's considered dangerous under the Second Amendment. And so the due process concerns are focused, as the name suggests, on the process, not on the actual substance of the law, not on the fact that it's removing firearms, but on what process you get before those arms can be removed. And so from a constitutional perspective, there are many areas of law where the Supreme Court has said emergency action is necessary to protect the public health and safety, and it's okay for those hearings to be held on a temporary emergency basis and then later have a full hearing at which the person can contest that evidence. So it happens in if there are, you know, credible allegations of child abuse, a child can be removed from the custody of their parents even before the parent has a full opportunity to go to a hearing and contest the evidence against them. And these kind of situations are specifically the kinds where imminent action is necessary to reduce the risk of catastrophic harm. So the court has said on many occasions that this kind of situation is perfectly consistent with due process. And so from a constitutional perspective, just the fact that there are these emergency orders possible is not a grounds to think that they violate the due process clause. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't concerns that states should be really cognizant of when they're thinking about these laws. They should be thinking about what time period these laws are going to be in effect for, what standard of proof the person should have to prove before the guns can be removed, what group of people can go into court and ask for a petition, whether there are statutory penalties for somebody who uses this process maliciously or abuses it, although we haven't seen that in the states that haven't acted in these laws. So there are certainly issues for states and the federal government to be concerned about, but it's just inaccurate under existing constitutional law to say that the structure of these red flag laws is violating due process.
Jake Charles is with us from the Center for Firearms Law at Duke University, looking at ideas on the table in the Congress, especially in the Senate, when it comes to gun reforms. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there things you'd like to see pass? Are you things you're worried about passing? Call 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity to express my opinion and get your reaction. I believe that our rights in the Constitution require us to take some responsibility. So every time I see people talk about, I have a right to do this, I have a right to do that, we also have a responsibility as citizens to be, intelligent in exercising our rights. So my opinion is, I believe we have a right to bear arms, but we have a responsibility to learn how to operate that weapon safely. And I actually support the laws where you are 21 years old before you can own something like that. In fact, I think 21 should be a federal law for everything, voting, driving, everything, because then we know that's the age of adulthood. But I'm not going to change everything. It's just my opinion that we need maturity when it comes to exercising our rights. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. And Jake, Jeff points toward another idea being bounced around and getting some approval for, including from Senator Manchin in West Virginia, a Democrat who's sometimes skeptical about changes in gun laws, changing the age for certain categories of firearms, the minimum age from 18 to 21. I've seen people say semi-automatic weapons or semi-automatic rifles. I think there's a couple different ideas bouncing around there. Again, people saying, well, wait a minute, why can you take away rights for that 3 years of somebody's life? What are your thoughts on the legality of that kind of change, the minimum age for ownership of certain kind of guns?
Right. And so one of the things that's interesting about it is you noted that Florida enacted these red flag laws after the Parkland shooting. It also raised the age for rifle purchases up to 21 as well. So another instance of a red state taking these actions in response to a mass shooting that are now getting picked up on the national level. A federal judge did uphold Florida's law against a Second Amendment challenge. It's now on appeal in the Federal Court of Appeals governing Florida. But a similar California law that bars those who are 18 to 20 years old from purchasing certain semi-automatic firearms and long guns in particular. That law, a federal appeals court in California struck down just a few weeks ago as violating the Second Amendment. I think that law is, or that opinion is not likely to stand. It's probably going to get reversed by the en banc, the full Ninth Circuit. But there's certainly a difference of opinion right now about what the Second Amendment allows states to do with age restrictions. Under existing federal law, federal licensed dealers, gun dealers, they can't sell handguns to those who are under 21 years of age. And some of the proposals are to raise that age requirement for dealers up to 21 for rifles and shotguns, just like it is for handguns. I've seen those proposals discussed. And I think there's contested history there. There's kind of contested constitutional understandings based on the fact that we have different courts going in different directions. But I think it's certainly one of the things that has been getting a lot of attention, as we saw recent mass shooting perpetrators who were under 21 years old, and they were able to go into a licensed gun dealer and purchase their rifles legally.
We're talking about the latest gun legislation being debated and negotiated in Congress. Jake Charles is with us, Executive Director of Duke University's Center for Firearms Law. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of some of the changes on the table? Expanding background checks, changing age limits for certain kinds of firearms, encouraging states to have red flag laws, and more. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Jake Charles, lecturer at Duke University, executive director of the School Center for Firearms Law. With us today, looking at new potential gun legislation in Congress, what impact it could have. Some Republicans in the Senate are saying there might be an opening. Here's Pennsylvania Republican Patrick Toomey from the Senate on CBS's Face the Nation yesterday.
I think at the end of the day, this is going to come down to whether we can reach a consensus in the United States Senate. There are intensive discussions underway. It includes people who have not been engaged on this issue in the past. I certainly can't guarantee any outcome, but it feels to me like we are closer than we've been since I've been in the Senate.
Let's go back to your calls now. Jimmy is with us in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hi.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Yeah, I think expanded background checks, as long as it can be done expeditiously and without too long a wait, and maybe a limitation on the size of magazines, although, you know, there's a lot of them out there now, so I don't know how good that would be. But I think they should be tried. But I don't agree with raising the age from 18 to 21. I mean, once you're an adult, you know, there's a constitutional amendment, the Second Amendment. I understand drinking age is different, but there's no constitutional right to drink or some of the other things that they have different limitations on. So I don't agree with that one.
Gotcha, Jimmy. Thanks for the call. Jimmy points us toward a couple of the other things that people are talking about there. The idea of expanded background checks, Jake, people call it a gun show loophole sometimes, places where you can buy guns without going through the normal background check. How big a window is that? How much would it mean to close it?
Right. So the federal requirement right now only requires background checks to be performed when a gun is sold by a federally licensed dealer. And so not everyone who sells guns has to get a license from the federal government to do so. Only those who are doing it as part of their livelihood with the principal motive of profit are required to get a license. And that's why it's often called the gun show loophole, because people who are kind of more casual sellers of firearms can go to gun shows and sell their firearms and not have to do background checks. But it's a little bit of a misnomer, because if a federally licensed dealer is at a gun show, they have to perform background checks. So it's more of a private sale loophole or exception. And so some states have closed this. Some states require background checks, like California, for private firearms transfers. And as the caller suggested, some of the concerns that folks have is that this would be done quickly. What some of those states have done is said, you just go to a FFL, a federally licensed dealer, and you get the background check done there. And it's worth noting that at dealers, most checks are instantaneous. The background check is called the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, and most checks are completed instantly. So it would include a lot more sales than we currently have included in the background check requirement. It's really hard to say what number of sales that is, because just by their nature of being these private sales that are unlicensed, legally unlicensed, there's no kind of record of when a private sale happens. There's no national registration, no national registry of firearms. So there's no way to track which guns have been transferred in which situations. But I think it's fair to think that there would be a substantial number of transactions that would now be included in this requirement. How many of those would actually go through it is, you know, anyone's guess, but there would be a new requirement that would include a lot of sales that have so far been unregulated.
Before I go back to our callers, while we're on the topic of background checks, one idea that's been floated is, correct me if I'm getting this wrong, it's a little complicated, that for an adult making a firearm purchase, the background check in this proposed idea would include their juvenile record, which currently wouldn't be taken into consideration. Do I have that right?
I'm not actually sure about that. I haven't seen that proposal, and I'm actually not sure. I don't know. Yeah, I would think that maybe if there are sealed juvenile records, then maybe they aren't, but I'm actually not sure.
All right, I'll dig more into that one then. Let's go back to your calls now. Pete is with us in Eau Claire. Pete, hi.
Yes, sir. Say, I guess I'm not really against sensible, gun laws, but I'm not sure how effective they'll be. I am in my mid-60s, and something has changed in society since the 1970s. Gun laws have become more restrictive. I know when I've bought guns in the past, there's been a 3-day waiting period. There's background checks. Prior to the 70s, there still were semi-automatic rifles. Back at the turn of the century, some of the first hunting guns were semi-automatics. An assault rifle is really a cosmetic thing. I don't know how well some of these gun laws will work. I mean, take Chicago, for instance, some of the most restrictive gun laws in the country. 40 people were shot there last week and 10 killed. I would guess that the number of murders committed by law-abiding, sane gun owners annually is probably zero.
Pete, thanks for the call. People point towards Chicago a lot, Jake. As I understand it from some Harvard Health studies, many of the crime guns used in Chicago came from states with laxer gun control laws, many Indiana, some from here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's right. One of the problems with from Chicago's perspective of trying to regulate guns is that it's really easy to get guns right across the border in Indiana, which has significantly looser gun laws. And so that creates a problem for jurisdictions where, guns can freely flow into the area. The color is right that there, there is this concern among those who are opposed to gun laws about whether or not those who are intent on doing harm will just break the law anyways. I think there is some reason to doubt that that's always the case. As we saw in the Texas shooting, the perpetrator waited until his 18th birthday, at which point under federal law, he could legally go into the gun dealer and buy a weapon. I've seen some reporting that he tried to get access to a rifle earlier. If the federal law had not stood in his way, if there was no age requirement and he could have gone and got a rifle when he was 17, maybe he would have undertaken these acts earlier. If federal law had been changed to require him to be 21, maybe he would have been discouraged enough to not commit these acts at that time. Of course, it's hard to say what would have happened under a hypothetical situation. Mm-hmm. But I think we do have evidence that there are at least some people who are intent on doing harm, even intent on doing harm to others, who are dissuaded because there are legal barriers in the way. And that's to say nothing of the fact that some gun laws are actually designed to help with gun suicide rates. And we know that suicide attempts with a firearm are far more lethal than other methods of attempting suicide. And that many of the people who attempt and do not die by suicide go on to die from other causes and not from suicide. So reducing the areas where guns can enter into situation oftentimes does have the effect of saving lives.
Time for one more caller. Zoe is with us in Stevens Point. Zoe, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Zoe?
I just had an idea that I think if, because I had to do hunter safety in order to get my hunting license here in Wisconsin, and I just think that that was a good educational experience for me. It taught me how to handle guns and where to point my guns and not to shoot other people with them. So I think if it was mandatory all over the place that everybody had to have like a hunter safety education or just a gun safety education, not to shoot others, something like that, it could like deter people from wanting to harm others with guns. I'm not sure, but
Zoe, thanks for the call. Like, thanks for the call, Zoe. We don't have too much time left. Jake, has the legality of that been tested, saying, okay, if you want a gun, you have to pass some kind of safety class?
Yeah, so it hasn't, to my knowledge. I don't think even most gun rights supporters think that a training requirement itself for a certain kind of permits, at least like, you know, a concealed carry permit or a public carry permit, that a training requirement itself would violate the Second Amendment. And if the Supreme Court does what many of us observers think it might do in the upcoming case that it has right now, which is to strike down New York's concealed carry law, the restrictive version of it, then we might see more states adopting stricter training requirements. One thing that we're seeing happening in a large number of states, though, is going in the opposite direction. So states that are moving to eliminate their permit requirement altogether, which eliminates any background check requirement and eliminates any training requirement that they previously had.
Zoe, thanks for that call. And just our last few moments, Jake, how big a deal is this Supreme Court case you just mentioned?
Yeah, it has a potential to be pretty monumental. So the exact law at issue exists in about 6 to 8 other states, depending on how you count. But that accounts for about 25% of the population. But the Supreme Court might also change the way that lower courts are supposed to decide these kind of challenges in Second Amendment cases. And that has the potential to be even more monumental than just this one particular type of law. So we'll be watching to see if the court requires lower courts to look only to history and tradition, or if they allow courts to consider the effectiveness of regulation.
Jake, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Jacob Charles is Executive Director of the Center for Firearms Law at Duke University. He's with us today for a look at the prospects for new gun laws in Congress. All eyes on the Senate right now and negotiations between senators of both parties.